and welcome to SciShow Tangents, that lightly competitive knowledge showcase starring some of the geniuses that make the YouTube series SciShow happen. I am joined, as always, by Stefan Chin.
I'm here, as always. Hello.
Hello.
Great energy so far.
Yeah. No. Hey, guys.
What's your tagline?
Homeward Bound.
I wish I was. Hi, Sam.
Hi,
Sam Schultz is also here.
How are you?
Good. What's your tagline?
Poetry crime.
Poetry crime.
I did one of those.
Sari Riley is also with us.
Yep.
How are you doing?
Still with us.
Still with us. What's your tagline?
Need a hug, need a nap.
Ooh.
Oh, that'd be nice. And I'm Hank Green. I've had a lovely week. Summertime is good, and it's sort of like tailing off into where it's nice and cool in the mornings, and I love it.
Summer here lasts 3 weeks.
I know.
I hate it.
But there hasn't been any bad fires, so we're all counting our blessings.
Yeah, we're in bonus summertime now.
Bonus.
And my tagline is pants, but with pockets.
What a concept.
Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts. We're playing for glory, but we're also keeping score. We do everything we can to stay on topic, but judging by previous conversations, we won't be great at that. So if the rest of us deems the tangent unworthy, we can force someone to give up a Hank buck. So tangent with care. Now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem this week from Sam Schultz.
Whose woods these are, I think I know. I will check my Google Maps, though, just to see if I'm getting near the pizza place called Domino's. A satellite far up from here does through its little camera peer between the woods and frozen lake to show a path from which not to veer. My foot now removed from the brake, my car lurches forward with a shake. The only other sounds the beep of my phone telling me which left to take. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I got two pizza pies real cheap. And miles to go before I eat. And miles to go before I eat.
that is definitely
a poetry crime.
Yeah.
Is Robert Frost going to burst out of the ground and get me?
Oh, goodness gracious. Our topic for the day is navigation, which is how you get from a place to a different place. And we've been doing that for a long time to try and not get lost. And I think that, like, originally you were just like, follow the river until this landmark and then do this. And go over two mountains and you'll be there. But now we have all kinds of very complicated and excellent systems to do it with. So we get to talk, maybe I don't know what we're going to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about old ways of doing it, new ways of doing it. But do we have a definition of what navigation is, or do we all just sort of know what it is?
I think you covered it. Just humans finding their way different places and gradually using more technology to do it. So looking at landmarks, then looking at stars, looking at animals.
Looking at animals?
Expand on that one.
What does that mean?
Well, animals can navigate.
Oh, like looking at how animals navigate. Not like, take a left at the rhino. It moves.
As soon as you see a bird, like 5 more steps, that's where the treasure is.
Thank you, by the way, to June Fruit for suggesting this topic.
Ooh. Yeah, thank you. We have a whole list of viewer topics that we're going to be going through in the next couple months.
And now it's time for one of our panelists has prepared 3 science facts, but only one of them is real. The other panelists have to figure out, either by deduction or wild guess, which is the true fact. If we do, we get a Hank buck. If we don't, Stefan will get our Hank buck, because you are the one giving us the facts. Hit me, brother.
So in a city where the streets are aligned to cardinal directions, people seem to be fairly good at knowing which way is north. But which of these 3 things is a real fact about a pedestrian's ability to orient themselves in a city where the streets are not aligned with cardinal directions? Number 1, pedestrians asked to simply point towards north had a hard time doing so because their guesses were based on the orientation of the roads, which again were not aligned with the cardinal directions. And this happened even when they were indoors. Number 2.
That makes sense.
Pedestrians who had been tested to have higher than normal sensitivity to magnetic fields were able to relatively accurately orient themselves northwards even when blindfolded and indoors.
No.
Okay, keep going. Bullshit to me.
Number 3. The pedestrians were much better able to pick out cardinal directions when they were indoors and not being influenced by the roads nearby. And so they could just focus on their mental maps, which had a north-up orientation.
Oh.
So the 3 facts we have. Pedestrians have a hard time pointing north when they're in not in north, south, east, west roads, even when they're inside. 2, people who have higher than normal sensitivity to magnetic fields. I'm not even going to finish that one. Where three, pedestrians were better at picking out cardinal directions when they were inside without being distracted by the roads. One and two seem completely possible to me.
They seem like inverses of each other almost, right?
Yeah, okay. Kind of.
Direction to me means nothing when I walk inside. That's north? That's north.
Yeah.
He seems to be pointing north.
I'm pointing north.
I agree that that's north.
Okay. I mean, this building is in a north-south orientation, yeah. So it's pretty easy.
Well, I don't know. It's not my building.
You don't picture... I picture a little me, kind of like a Google Maps person, yes, dragged around by the color of their shirt, being plopped down outside. So, like, if I were to walk upstairs, plop down outside...
Mm. Missoula doesn't have a north-south grid in this part of town, does it? Oh, yeah, I guess it does.
Yeah, we're good right here, I'm pretty sure.
The slant streets are no.
Yeah.
And then things get a little weird.
There's a couple weird places.
Yeah.
I'm not good at this because, like, I don't have a lot of experience with that. In Florida, there were no grids at all.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
It was just wigglies.
The roads were made by alligators just walking around.
That's exactly right. Children on alligators. Oh. Back when they let the children run free.
Yeah.
They didn't keep them safe all the time. They just put them on an alligator and had them ride around.
Yeah, slapped the alligator's ass and it just runs off.
That's how they have fun.
Do humans sense the magnetic field?
Is no. this a thing?
I can't imagine humans being able to sense magnets, but if Stefan found the one study on the whole planet that's like, we held a magnet near their brain and they jittered.
Some animals can sense
yeah.
it. Right?
Yes.
Definitely
animals
some animals can.
Can any mammals?
From my understanding, and there's probably a scientist out there that specifically studies magneto sensations. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what the word is in mm-hmm. animals. We have an understanding that some animals, like birds, use the magnetic field to navigate because mm-hmm. if you remove that in some way, I don't know what experiments they do. They put like little tinfoil hats on them or something. then they stop being able to navigate as well. But we're okay. not sure what mechanism enables them to, like what in their cells
right.
is a magnetic particle or a magnetic reactive particle.
Yeah, they seem to, yeah. like, different organisms have, like, clusters of magnetite inside of them that they can mm-hmm. find. We don't know exactly how their cells are able to sense what those clusters of magnetite are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But some bats do have that. So.
Okay.
It's a thing.
Okay.
Which is wild.
Well, I'm going to go with the last one. That's harder to tell inside which direction, right? Is that what it is?
Or
is
that was
easier. That's easier.
I'm going with the harder one.
Okay.
The first one?
Yeah, because I can't do it.
I'm going to go with pedestrians were better at picking out the cardinal directions inside when they weren't distracted by the roads, number three.
I'm going to go with Sam and say it's harder because I'm also very directionally challenged. And so, like, anything will throw me off.
It was the first one.
It was.
Is that the one I guess?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sam's like, which one?
Sarah got it right.
Sam is not only having a little trouble with where north is, but what.
Also, what, yeah,
which
yeah.
answer? There have been previous studies that sort of suggested that our mental maps are oriented north facing up. And it sort of made sense to me because, like, that's how we look at Google Maps and, like,
video
is so prevalent
maps.
These days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that seemed intuitive. But the researchers in this study thought that that might be because the testing in previous studies was done in cities where the grids of the roads are aligned mm-hmm. with the cardinal directions. And so they specifically tested in a city where they were off axis. And so they took participants to different, like, locations on the sidewalk around town and, like, had them point north. And most people were able to point within, like, a 180-degree semicircle.
Yeah.
So it was like, this is, like, sort of more north than yeah. south, but it was kind of all over the place. And, like, the aggregate answers were, like, all around the circle. Like, people mm-hmm. were all over the place. But it looked like people were using the roads to orient themselves. So it would be like, I know that Main Street kind of faces like northeast, southeast.
Right.
So I'm going to orient myself that way and then turn left a little bit. And yeah. that's probably north. So that was the outside thing. And then inside, they were told to imagine that they were facing in a particular direction and then indicate what direction a different landmark was from there. So like you're at the coffee shop facing the statue of Aristotle or whatever there's a statue of, and then in what direction is City Hall or something like that, like known landmarks. And they found that people's guesses happened more quickly and were more accurate when the initial orientation that you were asked to imagine was aligned with the roads, not aligned with cardinal directions.
Hmm.
And so they think that people's maps are more aligned based on the roads, exactly. Which sort of makes sense. Yeah. But I thought that, like, over time, like, you living in an area, like, you'd, and looking at Google Maps, like, you'd sort of get a sense of, like, how your city's oriented.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like length of time that people were living there didn't really matter. Mm. They gave people a questionnaire to see, like, how good their sense of direction was in general. And, like, people who had a good sense of direction did slightly better, but it wasn't that big of an effect.
That's what I want to know. Because people are always like, I'm so bad at direct, or, like, I have an amazing sense of... And I'm like, I bet the effect is small.
Mm-hmm.
I bet the difference between somebody who's just a total loser at trying to get places and somebody, like, who thinks that about themselves.
Sure.
It's like people who are like, I'm tone deaf. I'm like, maybe, but probably you just, like, aren't as, you're slightly worse than average.
Yeah, and the full picture of, like, how we navigate and orient is probably much more complicated.
Right.
And, like, we use different mental models in different situations for different tasks.
Well, I think, for example, with Missoula, I know north better because people refer to parts of Missoula by the cardinal directions.
Very
it's like,
helpful.
This is the north side, that's the south side. But I don't think I could... I lived in Boston for 4 years, but I don't think I could do that city the same way because no one calls
things like north, the north, southeast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also bonkers in Boston.
It's also
bonkers. Yeah, it's also
Boston.
Crazy.
What a disaster. I was once navigating, like, my GPS was taking me through Boston and it was like, okay, drive on this road, and it just stopped. Like, it was never there. It had never connected. I was, like, looking at the place where I was like, I can see where you want me to go.
It had invented a road that I thought should be there.
Yeah. It was like a neighborhood slow road, and it was like, now turn right onto this extremely fast thing. Literally, there's a fence between you and it. I was very late for that meeting.
The third one, which was, like, the opposite of the right answer, I just made that up. But the magnetic fields one, there's a recent study where they noted in the thing, and he was like, we know the results of this study are controversial.
Mm-hmm.
We controlled really, really well.
Good.
It seems like there's an alpha wave response in the brain to changing magnetic fields that were made to simulate the strength and movement of Earth's magnetic field changes. But super, like, no conclusions can be really drawn from this. They maybe are seeing some alpha wave. Like, they say they can reproduce it, but, like, no sense that we could, like, sense that or, like, do anything with that. But I was like, that sounds like a good way to make a lie.
Well, you gotta, is there a dose-dependent response? That's the first thing you gotta look for as you increase the magnetic field and people's alpha waves get bigger. And then you're like, we've done it. We've determined that humans have another sense to stack on top of all the other ones. And then you go from there and you're like, we can move things with our minds.
Ooh.
The ball bearings.
Just metal, though, like Magneto, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just thinking about how Magneto works. Let's move on. next up, we're going to take a short break. And then it's time for the Fact Off. Welcome back, Hank Buck Total. Sarah, you've got 1 point. Sam has got two. Stefan's also got one. And I continue my streak of no points.
Back on top, baby.
Well, let's see if I can bring it back, everybody, now during the Fact Off, where Sarah and I will be competing to present the better fact to our other panelists here. So you each have a Hank Buck to award to us if you like our fact. And if you hate our fact, you can throw it into the fire that we have here at SciShow Tangent Studio. Whoa. We always keep a fire going. You guys,
that's why you say that thing
it.
At the end, the fire to be lighted or whatever.
Yeah, that's the
You're
fire.
You're talking about the literal
that's
fire.
The literal fire. It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to keep control of inside. We have to have a very large fume hood. Anyway, so the person who's going to go first is the person who most recently got lost.
Like a week and a half ago?
Mm-hmm.
Was the last time I felt lost.
Right.
I didn't, like, actually...
Like, existentially?
Oh, no, that's every day. But I felt lost navigation-wise.
Yeah.
Because it was late at night, driving home from a national park in New York with three drunk people in the car.
One of them was not you.
Yeah, you were okay.
I was not, yes. And I had to navigate by myself in the dark.
Oh, no.
You were just hanging out drunk in a national park?
There's a wedding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I felt very stressed out the entire time and drove, like, 10 to 15 miles below the speed limit.
I was just in Minneapolis and we were trying to go get breakfast. And as occurs every time I walk out of a hotel, you look at your phone and it's like, it's this way. And you're like, but I have no idea where I am on the map. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. which way is left, right? Which way is north, south? So I guess I would count that as lost.
Mm-hmm. But you found your way.
I did. Like the last time I was lost. Like I was like worried. Mm-hmm. That's a totally different world. And like that so rarely happens.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. I do feel like driving 15 miles below the speed limit is the hallmark of being stressed out and lost.
Yeah.
So maybe Sari wins in this situation.
Okay.
So that means like, what?
Who knows what it means?
Oh. Yeah. It means you get to choose.
I'll just go. So one of my favorite stories about navigational history is the longitude problem.
Ah, classic. Longitude.
Do you guys all know it?
No.
No.
Oh.
I mean, I have some vague idea that we could figure out one of latitude or longitude, and we were like, yeah, we know this one, but we had no idea where we were on the Earth the other way.
Well, mm-hmm. you just said the whole fact.
That's it. Okay, I'm going to take a nap now. No, there's more details. Latitude is the one that's easy to figure out because you can look up at the sun at noon and use a tool called a sextant, which is like the triangle-y one. Mm-hmm. To reference like its angle to the horizon and like cross-reference that with a table to see where you are relative to the equator.
The table has the angle and the date.
Yeah. All of these things include a lot of math, which I'm going to gloss over a little
okay.
bit.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great.
So latitude, distance relative to the equator, like north and south, relatively easy to figure out because mm-hmm. The sun has an angle to the horizon. That's predictable. Longitude, which is east to west, much harder to figure out mm-hmm. because usually, like even on land, they would have to take multiple observations to figure out where they were relative to other things. I think the problem with the east to west navigation is that there are more changing elements in the sky mm-hmm. relative to your position. Mm-hmm. And so like our time zones are changing now and we have satellites that help us position ourselves. But if you were like a sailor on the ocean or walking across a continent, mm-hmm. there aren't that many things that you could easily reference without doing a bunch of math mm-hmm. to figure out where you were. And this was a big problem because then sailors would know where they were north or south, but not know how close to land they were or things like that. And so they'd crash into rocks or there were a bunch of shipwrecks because of this, basically, mm-hmm. because people came up on land way too fast. Because they didn't realize where they were.
They weren't using their damn eyes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're the land is below the ground. Oh. Sometimes it's the clouds are in front of you.
All right.
So in 1714, this became a big enough problem that the British government offered a cash prize.
I love that.
The Longitude Act they passed on July 8th, 1714, and they offered awards up to £20,000, which is like millions of pounds in modern day, depending on the accuracy of this method. They just like did an open call. Can someone figure out how to do longitude?
Yes.
If it's good, we'll give you money. And so historically, astronomers were like the big people as far as navigation. Like this was a lot of the time where we would look at the stars, use those to navigate. And so Galileo and Halley?
Yeah, sure.
The comet guy? Okay.
Yes. Proposed different like celestial navigation strategies. I think Galileo was really into Jupiter's moons. Halley was into something else. And then other people suggested this too, but the most famous person who worked on this tool was a clockmaker named John Harrison, who was just like this, they paint him as like this podunk country boy who was a carpenter,
right.
who came up with a different idea that other people had experimented with called a marine chronometer, which is a clock that you would bring with you at sea. And so then you could look up and be like, oh, it's noon local time. What time does my clock say? And basically like calculate your time difference. Mm. And that will let you know your longitude. Okay. So it's like reverse engineering time zones.
As long as you can keep your clock going.
Yeah. As long as you can keep
then
your clock
going.
You can
be like, the sun is currently directly above my head, but my clock says it's 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the same way that like time zones work. You can be like, I am a time zone away from that spot.
And so the problem with clocks before this time was they were pendulum clocks. And like the way that clocks counted up seconds was a pendulum swinging
not
back and forth.
On a boat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but if you bring that on a ship, everything's going to get messed up really quickly. And so Hooke, the dude who made Hooke's Law, started experimenting with
Captain Hooke.
Not Captain Hook. It's Hook with an E.
Hook with
but
an
Captain
E.
Hook liked clocks.
Robert Hook was his name. Bob Hook.
Okay.
Not Captain
Bob.
Hook.
That was Captain Hook's name.
Yeah.
Bob.
Canonically. They came up at some point with the idea of spring-loaded clocks, like the timekeeping element being a spring bouncing back and forth rather than a pendulum. Among other innovations, John Harrison came up with two like very, very chunky clocks like that would sit on a big table that had a spring system to keep track of time. And they worked a little bit better than a pendulum clock at sea, but springs can still get shifted around with the flow of the waves. Mm-hmm. And then he made one, I think he included like some ball bearing systems and made it better, like made the springs more enclosed. And that was H3, and it was still a pretty big box and it did better. But then he was like, it's still not good enough. This isn't going to win me my money. Mm-hmm. And he made a like a big pocket, like imagine the size of your face sort of. Mm-hmm. And I think that is like the size of the pocket watch he invented with small spring system. And that was H4. And that was the model that won him the Longitude Prize because it was accurate. I think it lost less than a second per day, which is really, really accurate for the time.
So when you say marine chronometer, it's just a clock, right?
Yeah, it's just a water clock.
But like,
it's just a spring,
it's a clock that works when it's on water.
Yep.
Yeah. We had clocks before, but like clocks got better then. Mm-hmm. Like because we did this, everyone was like, oh, actually that's better in a lot of ways. You can make it the size of your face.
Yep.
That's basically pocket sized if you got a really big pocket.
Well, we had clocks back then, but they were all pendulum until they started to mess with how to tell time on the or how to do this on the water.
I think people were experimenting with non-pendulum clocks before that. So like in my mind, Bob Hooke is just super into springs. He probably was interested in them and for a good physical reason.
Yeah.
But
springs are dope.
Yeah, he likes springs. And so I think he was looking into a spring clock without thinking about the ocean problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But John Harrison and a couple other people who go uncredited but didn't actually build the thing were some of the first people to apply a non-pendulum clock idea to a big problem that the world was facing with navigation.
But could you take a pendulum clock and put it on like a, I don't know if gyroscopic is the right word, but like a table that is like weighted at the bottom and like free floating so that it like is always, does that make sense? So as the waves bounce the ship around, the clock stays oriented right up and down?
I think that even just moving the ship from side to side, like if you're tacking, like if you're going in a different direction, like it's gonna pull on the pendulum to some extent.
Yeah.
So you'd have to keep the clock exactly still. Mm-hmm. And if the clock is staying still, is not on a ship. I guess it's my turn now. So GPS, great and everything, but
I wrote a poem about it.
In 1985, 15 years before GPS was available for civilian use, you could buy and install a car navigation system called the ETAC Navigator that worked so well that the underlying techniques are still used in modern navigation software. Because the ETAC Navigator didn't need GPS. It had something much cooler. It had cassette tapes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Cassette tapes. I love this.
So the ETAC Navigator was a product of Stan Honey and Nolan Bushnell, who set out to create a car navigation system that would require only a digital map, a compass, and some sensors. And with this system, the compass and sensors would keep track of the path that your car had gone, and then it would locate you based on that path inside of a map somewhere inside of this tape. So it would figure out where you are as a technique called map matching. The navigator wouldn't give the turn-by-turn directions that we're used to these days, but it would see your location and the streets around you, and it would give you an arrow pointing in the general direction of where you want to go, like Crazy Taxi. That was, of course, very advanced at the time. This was the 1980s, so storing a whole bunch of digital map of a city in a way that would tolerate all the vibrations and heat of a car was not a trivial problem. So they used special cassette tapes with a polycarbonate shell that could handle temperatures up to 105 degrees Celsius.
Ooh.
And each cassette would hold 3.5 megabytes of data.
Oh, yeah.
So if you wanted to have all of the Bay Area covered, for example, you would have to get 6 tapes that would cover the entire Bay Area.
You have to like get out of your car and like put a new one into the wherever this thing
No, it's
was?
Inside the car with you.
Okay.
Yeah. So like you're like, oh, I drove out of the area that I'm in. Switch the tape out like you got a new song. So you're tired of hearing Salt and Pepper. You got to switch out the tape to play, like, you know, your Tiffany album.
So you could, like, buy different sets, like different map sets, and like.
And they were not cheap. So the individual cassette tapes cost about $35. But the system itself cost over $1,000 then, which would be like $3,000 now. And they did not sell very many. They sold like thousands of them. Yeah. So.
Okay, I have a lot of questions.
Okay.
I only have one, actually. When you put a new tape in, how did you orient where you were?
It oriented for you.
How?
It
how?
Knows where you... So it knows where you are based on the turns that you make. So if you're driving on a road, and so you go, say... 30 feet, and then you turn right, and then you go another 30 feet, and then you turn right, and then you go another 100 feet, and you turn left. Based on, like, where those points are, you could figure out, like, there's only, like, you know, after the first, after, like, the third or fourth turn, there's only one place where you could be.
Okay. Is the next fad that's going to come back?
Yeah, cassette tape, that seems extremely inefficient. And, like, the wild thing, I love that it has, like, a crazy taxi, like, you're going to this place... And this arrow points just in a direction. So just go that way, roughly. If anybody wants to see a picture of the ETAC navigation system, we'll put it up on scishowtangents.org. It's beautiful, green on green, just as you would expect.
The screeniest?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's time for you to pick which one your favorite fact was.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I forgot
was
I had
it. Was it the latitude, the
longitude problem?
Longitude problem, or was it the ETAC navigation system?
I have to say, I am tired of learning about new technology that cassette tapes were used for that I didn't know about. I'm annoyed that I didn't know.
You shouldn't have to take that out on me.
Actually, though, the boat thing reminds me of the pool tables on cruise ships.
Yeah.
Because they move with the boat so that they stay level. So you can actually play pool. So I'm going to give it to Sari.
Fine.
Yeah, take out your aggression on Hank's facts. What are you mad about, Sam?
Oh, I'm not really mad about anything right now. This is like one of those things where it's like, you could have something about how science saved humanity or about these dumb tapes. But the dumb tapes are so funny. And I love thinking about the dumb things that we used to do to make up for the fact that we didn't know how computers were yet. So Hank gets mine.
All right. Now it's time to ask the Science Couch, where we ask listener questions to our couch of finely honed scientific minds.
At L. Joel Rods asks, how did people navigate without stars, as in on cloudy or stormy nights?
I think they just crossed their fingers that it would stop being cloudy and stormy.
I mean, if you're in the middle of the ocean, like, you could just keep going and then figure out how far off course you are once that the clouds are gone, right?
Yeah, but then you might starve to death.
Yeah, it could turn out real bad. During nighttime, that's not going to, like, there's nothing you can do. But during the daytime, wasn't there, like, a rock? Mm-hmm. Tell me about the rock, Sari.
I'm going to tell you about this rock. Calcite has a very cool property called birefringence.
Mm.
So that light passing through calcite is split because of the way the crystal is oriented. So it forms a double image on it. So if you put, for example, calcite on top of a newspaper, all the words you'll see double, like slightly offset from each other.
Mm,
it's
cool.
Very cool. And the brightness of both images relative to each other depends on a property of light called polarization. Light is made up of waves that oscillate. When all of the oscillations are pointing in the same direction, light is polarized. Mm. Around the sun, there are concentric rings of polarized light with the sun at its center.
Mm-hmm.
And so with calcite, which is a crystal that depolarizes light, you can hold it up to the sky and determine the location of the rings around the sun.
And this is when it's cloudy.
Even when it's cloudy, yes. Mm-hmm. Because the light from the sun is still traveling through. There's still sufficient light. The light pattern on the calcite and through the calcite varies depending on the orientation of the stone relative to the light polarization from the sun. And I think when the images got more aligned or they got more equal in brightness, then you know that you're pointing more directly at the sun because the polarized lights are rings around it and they're hitting the stone in a more equal way.
Mm.
So this is what we think was mentioned in like Norse mythology or like Viking times called a sunstone that they used for navigation. So in these texts, there's this like a bunch of passages, as far as I can tell, that was like, we used the sunstone and found our way home. Mm-hmm.
You can also use a sunstone to turn your gloom into a blossom. So, mm-hmm.
Is that a Pokemon joke?
It's Pokemon yes.
The way the series is with music, I'm like with Pokemon.
That is a better thing to be that way about.
If you want to ask the Science Couch, you can follow us on Twitter at @SciShowTangents, where we'll tweet out the topics for upcoming episodes every week. Thank you at Becca Sitlali, at MiniMarker3, and everybody else who tweeted us your questions this week. Final scores! Stefan and I are tied for last with 1. Sari and Sam are tied for first with 2. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's easy to do that. First, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show, and we're going to be looking at iTunes reviews for topic ideas for future episodes. Second, tweet out your favorite moment from the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just
tell people about us.
Thank you for listening. I'm Hank Green.
I'm Sari Riley.
I'm Stefan Chin.
And I'm Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is a co-production of Complexly and the awesome team at WNYC Studios. It's created by all of us and produced by Caitlin Hoffmeister and Sam Schultz, who also edits a lot of these episodes along with Hiroko Matsushima. Our sound designer is Joseph Tuna Medish. Our social media organizer is Victoria Bongiorno, and we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. A 2-year study published in 2014 in the journal Frontiers in Zoology concluded that dogs can sense the Earth's magnetic field and seem to prefer to line themselves up with its north-south axis while pooping.
I've heard that before, but I think it's gonna be fake.
You know, I took it with a little bit of a grain of salt, too. So this isn't always observed every time a dog poops, and they think that's because dogs get thrown off when there's disturbances in the electromagnetic field. So they don't know which way to poop anymore.
Oh, is that's why they go around in circles a bunch?
They're like, whoa, what the hell? Yeah. Maybe it is. Maybe you cracked it open.